Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, the meeting's already started.
Sometimes it's important.
Last call, boarding gate number 9.
Sometimes it's urgent.
Sector alarm.
Sometimes it's vital. Hospital treatment within 1 hour of a stroke can prevent lifelong disability. If you notice someone experiencing sudden weakness on one side or having a problem speaking, walking, or seeing, call 911 fast. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keyes, or you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is saturdayswithjoykeyes@hotmail.com. I want to say thank you to all the fans for listening, tuning in, sharing. Past 720,000 downloads of the podcast. Wow, just amazing. I hope you have enjoyed the shows. I hope you've learned something. I hope you have fun listening to the music from the different musicians and share them with friends and family. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. Well, today, wow, I have some wonderful guests on the show because today or this whole month is Celiac Awareness Month, and today I have some experts, I will say, the Vice President of the National Foundation for Celiac Awareness. Her name is Jennifer North. Good morning, Jennifer.
Happy Celiac Awareness Month.
Happy Celiac Awareness Month to you. And also another expert, Cheryl Harris. She's a registered dietitian, and she does a lot of work and has a lot of resources on her webpage about gluten-free resources, books, recipes, everything. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, this is a really, like, sneaky illness. I mean, the other day somebody on Facebook said to me, wow, what next? Like, basically, what else are we not going to be able to eat, you know? And also that people have been eating, you know, wheat for a long time. So why does it seem like all of a sudden there's this, like, bloom in celiac disease? I'll refer to Jennifer on this. Is this, like, something new? Because of pesticides or something, or this has always existed?
Well, actually, there are two potential causes of celiac disease. We need a lot more research before we'll know exactly. The two main theories have to do with overexposure, and that's not necessarily related to genetic modification. It also has to do with the substance gluten, the gluten protein, hidden in lots of our processed foods as wheat starch or barley malt, for example. The other theory is called the hygiene theory, and that has to do with the amount that we've cleansed our environment and the role of the immune system in that scenario. So it is an environmental factor, and it's something that prevalence definitely is increasing. It's increased fourfold over the last 50 years, and those are the two theories that try to explain why.
Wow. So, Cheryl, what exactly is celiac disease? Could you just explain to the audience for people who are not familiar with the term and what it is?
Oh, absolutely. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disease. And what that means is in an autoimmune disease, the body attacks itself. And we know there are a bunch of autoimmune diseases, so like MS or like lupus or like type 1 diabetes. But in celiac disease, the body attacks the small intestine. That's the main target of the autoimmune process. And because the body is attacking itself and attacking the small intestine, it can cause all sorts of physical issues and nutritional issues and everything else along those lines.
Now, Jennifer, who's at risk for getting this? Because you mentioned about overexposure. Is there a certain area of the country, a certain area of the globe, a certain ethnicity, men, women? Who's at risk for getting this illness?
Well, in the United States, celiac disease does affect men and women of lots of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. Who's at risk really can be defined by sort of the genetic risk. So celiac disease is a genetic disease. All first and second degree relatives need to be tested. People that have symptoms, most of which can be easily identified as GI related. There are lots of non-GI symptoms of celiac disease, for example, anemia. But there is a family history. So if there's a family history of certain autoimmune diseases that are on the same genes as celiac celiac disease. So those are juvenile diabetes, Hashimoto's thyroid, multiple sclerosis. So if there's a family history of these diseases, if you have a relative who has celiac disease, or if you're having celiac disease symptoms, some of which may be known commonly and others may be hidden. So celiac disease has been referred to as a clinical chameleon. So it can represent itself in many, many different ways.
So, Cheryl, I mean, when somebody, what are the symptoms that people start having? Because it could be a symptom of something else. A lot of the symptoms seem similar to something else, and they may brush it off.
You know, I think that's a perfect point, Joy. And when you say what are the symptoms, my first thought is, well, we only have a half an hour here. There's 300 symptoms listed, potential symptoms of celiac disease. So it's, you're right, and it's exactly as Jennifer said. It is a clinical chameleon. We think about the classic symptoms of celiac disease, so like diarrhea, like weight loss, like stomach pain, maybe even constipation. Those are the things we tend to think about. But less commonly known symptoms that really are quite common, maybe things like migraines, maybe things like depression or skin rash. They may be things like unexplained infertility. Actually, for people who have infertility without known cause, it's actually 8% actually have celiac. So there's a huge range. And basically what I would say and what I would really encourage is that if you have a family history of either celiac or other autoimmune conditions, or if there's just a lot of things and you've done a lot of testing and haven't looked at celiac, I definitely encourage you to ask your doctors to test. Because some of the symptoms can be really subtle and can be really vague. The other thing that I would say is there's some people who will say to me, oh, you know, I was diagnosed because my sister or my uncle or whatever else, but I don't have any symptoms. Sometimes after they've been gluten-free for, you know, 6 months, they'll start to say, oh, those headaches or those joint aches or whatever else that I just thought were part of getting older. And that's so
it's,
often
it's amazing.
The things we think, mm-hmm.
That's just kind of amazing that this slight something that, you know, like I don't even think about it. Like I eat all different kinds of bread and, you know, grains and things, and I'm not even thinking about it. Jennifer, the testing, Cheryl was talking about the testing. What other tests can be done to confirm that somebody has celiac disease?
Well, there are several tests that are done to check blood antibody levels. Some doctors also do tests for the genes, which can help to rule celiac disease out or to sort of trace the family side, and so that you can look at which family members are at risk. Actually, we have a symptoms checklist on our website, doihaveceliac.org, and not only can you look at the symptoms and fill out what symptoms that you have, but you can also print that out and bring it to your doctor so you can show the doctor which symptoms you're having, and there's information that also includes which blood tests to order. There is what's called a celiac panel, and so it's important that doctors are aware which tests to order.
That's really good. Now, tell me is that at your Celiac Central or a different web address where people can do the little survey?
Sure. So you can link to the symptoms checklist from our website, celiaccentral.org, or you can go directly to the URL, doihaveceliac.org, and that will take you immediately to the symptoms checklist.
Oh, that's easy. Do I have celiac? That's easy, very easy. So I want to mention that both of you guys are on Twitter. Cheryl is Cheryl Harris, RD, follow her, and the National Foundation for Celiac Awareness is Celiac Awareness. At Celiac Awareness on Twitter. Also, their website is celiaccentral.org, and Cheryl's website is harriswholehealth.com. Again, harriswholehealth.com. So now, okay, we found out that we have celiac. Maybe our relatives have it. I've been having these symptoms. I go get tested. Now what? I mean, this is crazy because so many foods are made in places like, I mean, I heard about peanuts. People are allergic to peanuts. So a lot of people wear that. You know, they go to the restaurant, is anything created with peanuts, they, you know, don't touch, blah, blah. But now you're saying wheat, grains, barley, what are the things, rye, I mean, so, okay, where do we start with this, Cheryl? What's the first thing we need to do once we find out that we have celiac disease?
Well, there's a couple of things when you first find out, and one is I definitely recommend making use of the resources like celiac, like National Foundation for Celiac Awareness. I do also recommend sitting down with a dietitian or a nutritionist or someone who can help you sort through, because it's hard to figure out on your own. And a lot of it is knowing, you know, the basics of what you can eat and what you can't eat. That really is the most important part. And, you know, more detail on cross-contamination and everything else, because that's often where people get tripped up.
So, Jennifer, the organization, they have support groups. How would somebody find out? Is there a phone number they can call to contact you guys to discuss, like, wow, I'm just a little overwhelmed with this, you know, who can I talk to? Maybe who's already, like, went through this intro process, so to speak.
Sure. I think that really depends on what specific resources you're looking for. So there are support groups in every community. Some communities have multiple support groups, and there are web resources that will let you search in your area. If you're looking for face-to-face support, you can ask your doctor or your hospital where there's a local support group. There are also online resources. So, for example, on our website, we have a lot of printable guides. We also have a new patient guide that's an introduction to the gluten-free diet. But we also have active things, like we have free monthly webinars, and those are live once a month, but then they're archived, and those provide a little bit more detail, how to support your child as they're looking for a summer camp, how to send your child to college. So there are lots of sort of lifestyle and social support that's needed, sometimes in a face-to-face direct community way, and sometimes by connecting with others nationally or through social media. So it's really important, as Cheryl was saying, to learn those skills that you need, to learn the questions to ask, to learn how to read labels, and to learn about the resources that are out there. And there are a whole abundance that can get you going. It's a really active, vibrant, and close-knit community.
Cheryl, one of the things that I like about your website, you mentioned something that, I just hadn't even thought of, gluten-free drug list. Talk to me about this.
Well, you know, a lot of times we focus about what's going in our mouths, and we think about food, you know, and food for most people is the most critical piece. But a lot of times many of us take different medications, especially as we get older, you know, we or even over-the-counter drugs. So there's some kinds of Advil that actually contain gluten. So a lot of it is, yes, focusing on food, and food is a really important and critical piece, but it's also being aware of everything that goes in your mouth. Even if it isn't technically food, if it contains gluten, it could certainly be a problem. And one of the issues in this country is that there's no laws for regulating medications in terms of disclosing gluten. So unlike foods, where there are certain labeling laws, they may not be perfect, but there are labeling laws, and they do really help a great deal. With medications, it's really working with your pharmacist. There really isn't any kind of regulation either for gluten or for other allergens. So that really does put a lot of people at significant risk.
Now, I want to explain that this is not an isolated issue. I just found when I was just doing some research this week, there's an International Celiac Disease Symposium actually happening. This is the 15th one. It's not even the first one. This is happening in, Chicago. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Are either of you guys aware of that? Jennifer, you said,
Yeah. It's a meeting that happens, I believe, every other year, and it rotates locations. And we're very lucky to have this in the United States this year, where a lot of the clinicians and healthcare professionals that support us in the U.S. will have access to attend. So it's really where all of the latest research is presented in the form of poster presentation and talks, and it's really kind of where you get to see the cutting-edge information, not just on celiac disease, but also on gluten sensitivity and other gluten-related disorders where the research is really right in their infancy.
Yeah, I mean, that was, again, a lot of people don't know about it, but it's obviously a big problem if they're having an international conference about it. Let's just go back, because we're going to be running out of time soon, about some of the things we learned. One of the interesting things I learned from you guys is that a relative next to you may have it. First, second relative may have. Another issue is that you may have other autoimmune illnesses, not just celiac, so you might have to get checked out for other things. The symptoms are so varied that they're kind of hard to pinpoint, but I think one of the things I find in a lot of health shows, if you keep having a certain symptom, I think repetitive over a certain period of time, you might want to make note of that, keep a journal, and then be like, okay, for 3 months I've been having this issue. Okay, this is not right, and you shouldn't be having this. but also getting your yearly checkups. A lot of people just don't get their checkups. One of the things I think can be difficult, though, for people is some PCPs or, you know, doctors may not be as familiar or may not appreciate, as some say, the symptoms. Jennifer, have you had this issue? Have you heard this from people coming to your organization? Like, I tried to talk to my doctor and they brushed me off.
We have, and that's actually why we created the symptoms checklist many years ago, which is both online and in the form of a brochure that can be distributed nationally. The National Institutes of Health several years ago did identify physician education as a primary problem with the diagnosis of celiac disease. So at this point, only 17% of people with celiac disease are diagnosed. And because of that call and that need, the NFCA actually has a physician education for primary care doctors, and they can actually get continuing education credits to participate in that program. So it's really interesting. One physician, if they're educated, can actually diagnose an average of about 50 patients per year. That's the most recent data that I saw as we're looking at the impact of doing physician education for primary care providers.
So, Cheryl, now, if people can't eat wheat, barley, rye, all these things, what are some things that they can eat? And another interesting, just crazy thing I found out was about makeup, that some makeups might have some kind of additive. But let's just talk about what can people eat real quick. We have a couple minutes. What can they eat?
Absolutely. And I love to start there because I love to start on the positives, because there are things that everybody's eating already that are naturally gluten-free. And so plain fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, beans, fish, poultry, dairy, most dairy products, and single-ingredient foods, so like honey or brown rice or basil or things like that are naturally gluten-free. Of course, you know, we say chicken's gluten-free, but if you have soy sauce on it that has wheat in it, you know, it's not gluten-free anymore. But most plain, simple foods are gluten-free. And a lot of the things that are really nutritious that ideally we'd be eating a lot of, like vegetables and fruits and beans and nuts and seeds and all of that, are naturally gluten-free.
So now, but this cross-contamination issue, like some things I was reading about, like soups, and you just mentioned soy sauce, gravy, potato chips, I read something that might have, I mean, how would that have wheat or barley in the potato chips, or just cross-contamination from where it was processed, you think, Jennifer?
So, you know, it's interesting when you talk about food and food labeling. There really are two issues when it comes to having to be a detective related to gluten. And one has to do with cross-contamination. And that can happen anywhere from the field to the transportation to the storage to the manufacturing plant all the way into the grocery store. So you really have to look carefully at how food's been handled and how it's made and what label claims are being made. So it's important that manufacturers follow good practices and test their products to understand where they originate. But there are also things, when you talk about soy sauce, for example, where there is gluten that's hidden. So with the FDA-regulated foods need to identify wheat on the label. But barley and rye are not required to be called out. So malt is something, for example, that's pervasive and not required on the food label. So anything that you don't make yourself, you really have to pay attention to not just how it's made, where it's made, and what the risk is for that particular food you're eating. So it sometimes feels like you need a PhD to navigate the gluten-free diet, but once you get used to it and you really start to pay attention and understand the processes and the terminology, and you get to know those brands that you can be loyal to who really are trying to serve the community by testing and labeling, then it gets a lot easier. And certainly it's the proliferation of verified tested gluten-free foods has been made so much easier in the last several years. So it's not as hard as it used to be to find gluten-free foods, and I like to say that I've seen everything available and it absolutely delicious too. Except
maybe
a croissant.
I went to one of your I went to an event you guys had, and this guy, he had like French toast and different things. I wouldn't have known it was gluten-free. I mean, unless somebody told me, but I'm going to be giving away a Whole Foods gift card. So if you're interested in winning that, you guys have to follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter or become a fan on Facebook, and that just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and I'll be posting a little contest there, and you can win a gift card. I just want to mention that there are some tests that people can take. One of the things I was reading about, this serologic test that There are three antibodies common in celiac disease. That's something. There's a TTG antibody test. Cheryl, have you heard of that test?
That's actually the most common one that's used in the U.S., and that's okay. a very accurate test. One of the things I want to make clear when we talk about testing, all of the tests so far that are out there, you need to be eating gluten, or they're not accurate. So it's important because a lot of times what happens is someone hears from their girlfriend, their hairdresser, whoever else, I went gluten-free, I felt better, and they go gluten-free, and they say, well, gosh, you know, maybe I have celiac disease. It's important that you get tested as soon as possible, ideally before you go gluten-free, so that you make sure the tests are accurate. Because I can tell you for sure, when I see people who have gone gluten-free and they feel better than they have in their entire life, it's a really hard sell to try to get them to start eating gluten again to find out whether or not they actually have celiac. So I really, whenever we're talking about testing, really, really underline, it's a simple blood test. Almost any insurance is going to cover it. Definitely talk to your doctor, get yourself tested. I find that people who actually have been formally tested are a lot more compliant, have a lot easier of a time following the diet and understanding how important it is than people who, shall we say, self-diagnose or, you know, they just assume that they have celiac.
Well, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on today. Jennifer North, she's the Vice President of the National Foundation for Celiac Awareness, and Cheryl Harris, the Registered Dietitian, sharing all your great knowledge about celiac disease. Again, follow them. They're on Twitter, Cheryl Harris, RD, on Twitter, and the Celiac Awareness, at Celiac Awareness on Twitter. They both have websites, celiaccentral.org and harriswholehealth.com. Also, the NFCA is on Facebook. As well, so you can check out their page there. They have a survey you can take, and tell us the address again, Jennifer. Do I have celiac disease?
Doihaveceliac.org. That is our symptoms checklist. It also lists the tests. And Cheryl, thank you for making that point. It's such an important one that you need to be eating gluten, you know, before you take the test so that it's accurate. So that's really crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you guys for both coming on today. And everybody, happy Celiac Awareness Month. And you guys have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for highlighting celiac, Joy.
Oh, you're welcome. I'll talk to you guys soon, okay?
All right.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I just got off the phone with Cheryl Harris. She's a registered dietitian and, like, a celiac guru. And Jennifer North, Vice President of the National Foundation for Celiac Awareness. I'm going to be giving away a Whole Foods gift card. You want to follow me at Joy Keys, become a fan on Facebook. You could possibly win. Stay tuned. In about a couple minutes, I'll be speaking with Patricia Stein. She is working on trying to get self-defense training to Native American women across the country. Her project is called Arming Sisters, so you want to stay tuned for that. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you have a wonderful Saturday.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue. Possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.